A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 132. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Space Odyssey, Voyage to the Planets. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yep, 2004, Space Odyssey, Voyage to the Planets, a simulated documentary. We sort of like trying to put it into a genre, and I think, Brian, we decided on speculative documentary.
That's my favorite term for these kinds of things, sure.
Right. So it's presented to us as a documentary on a manned space exploration mission to explore our solar system, set at some point in the not-too-distant future, and it's delivered to us with a lot of science and dramatic effects and so on.
Yes, it was originally broadcast in 2 15-minute episodes on the BBC, BBC One. It was a co-production between BBC and the Discovery Channel. And as we discussed in our previous episode, a lot went into making this a realistic vision of what a manned mission around the solar system might look like in terms of the space science and the engineering of the spaceship, the Pegasus, and even the medical aspects and so on.
And as you say, lots of science, lots of medical aspects, lots of space exploration explained to us. And there are some various dramatic moments and these fantastic space effects or fantastic special effects in a really big budget television production. So, you know, lots of stuff to look at and to talk about here as well.
Absolutely. So let's get a little bit more into the story of where these astronauts are going on this trip.
So, yeah, we've got these 5 astronauts on board the ship, the Pegasus. Last time we left them on Venus, but now they're heading out further and heading for Mars, where they will dispatch another of the landing craft that the Pegasus carries. This one is called the Ares, and they're going to head towards the surface of the Red Planet, Brian.
Yes, that's right. And they have a longer EVA, extravehicular activity planned, exploring the planet Mars. They are there for something like 2 or 3 weeks. They set up this camp on Mars next to the landing craft, and they are able to go out and explore some different features in the area on Mars. And once again, things do not go entirely to plan. And there are some issues that they run into, which is quite gripping at times.
Yes, it is. It's very gripping. And as you say, this is their longest mission away from the Pegasus. I think Mars is the one where they spend the most time exploring because that fits in with the mission profile. But as you say, things aren't going to go always according to plan, and equipment will perhaps not live up to expectations and so on. And after that, they will head out further into the solar system to explore the moons of Jupiter, pass near the rings of Saturn, and head out to Pluto itself. And of course, along the way, we've got this 6-year mission and the crew having to deal with the sort of the hardship and rigor of surviving in space for 6 years. And the difficulties that will present along the way. And there are several.
Yes, they get into that quite extensively, actually. And they have things like near misses with asteroids almost hitting the ship or smaller asteroids actually hitting the ship. They have equipment failures. They have things where they realize that particular pieces of equipment are not as well designed and as useful as they thought. They come into illness in one case, which threatens the success of the mission. They have all of these things coming up and all of these concerns coming up. There are things being mentioned, you know, out in the solar system, how do they deal with the radiation? It's mentioned at one point that all of the astronauts may end up being sterile after spending that amount of time without the protection of Earth's magnetic field, and so on. So there are some very interesting ideas being explored here.
Yes, it is very interesting, and the way they sort of tell us about it, and as you say, I mean, the bits of kit and equipment which they've predicted or they've sort of designed to the best of their predictions, and in particular, there's one spacesuit designed for one particular EVA that really causes them problems, and it's the result is quite dramatic and quite sort of like moving as well, I think, Brian.
Yes, it is. They have like a basic spacesuit design, which is, you know, fairly big and bulky, but, you know, very resilient spacesuit. But they have specially modified versions for a number of the different landings that they have planned. So some spacesuits are set up for dealing with greater heat or pressure or dealing with radiation and so on. So they have a lot of these details for different kinds of conditions that are quite well mapped out.
Okay. And as we say, along the way, we have got the science bit. And this was very clearly designed as a program to tell us about the science of space exploration. And does it very well, I think, Brian. It's a very clever way of delivering this stuff to us. Along the way, we'll get lots of different areas covered. I mean, there was particular interest in the history of unmanned space exploration, so the history of all the robot probes that have gone before the crew of the Pegasus, and that was delivered to us because, of course, that's the real science, that, you know, the real history for us, and this program will tell us quite a bit about that.
Yes, the documentary aspect of this is more than just a format. There is a lot of real science and a lot of ideas about how you would do things on these types of missions, where they explore, you know, the different atmospheres and gravity levels and the different conditions on different planets and different bodies in quite a bit of detail as they go from one to the other. They also talk about some exploration of the origins of life itself. And you get into things about different types of orbital maneuvers that you would use in order to descend into an appropriate orbit near Jupiter, for instance, or doing different types of flybys to pick up velocity and this sort of thing. So there are a lot of different sorts of things in space science and related areas that are discussed in this.
And as well as that, we've got the fascinating aspect of the medicine and management of space travel and how these astronauts will survive for 6 years. We've talked a little bit before about how they have to exercise for so many hours a day to counteract the effects of weightlessness. We talked about them trying to grow their own food to make up for just the sort of ration type food they brought with us. We talked about recycling water and the interesting and unpleasant effects that has. And of course, there's also the radiation shield and how they have to manipulate the shield to try and protect them from the radiation, which at which will, as you say, will probably render them all sterile as a result. So it's all very interesting stuff, the medicine and the sort of actual day-to-day management of spaceflight.
The way they deal with the radiation is very interesting because it's not something where they mention some hypothetical radiation shield that solves everything and then you don't need to talk about it anymore. They had this very large disc at the sort of back end of the spaceship, the Pegasus, that they would use to position between them and various sources of radiation, especially the sun. But there were many situations where that was not enough, and they would need to turn on this magnetic field, which would have an effect of preventing a certain amount of radiation from getting through. And, of course, you end up with the charged particles with radiation going through the magnetic field. You have like an aurora borealis type of effect that is visible around the Pegasus when they turn that magnetic field on. So they've really gotten into a lot of details with that. And, of course, there are times where even this magnetic field for protection from radiation is not entirely enough, and there are still radiation issues they need to deal with in other ways.
And as you say, we've got stunning visuals to look at. It's all presented beautifully for us and up on screen. And then backing it all up, we have the sort of calm and informative voice of David Suchet telling us what's going on and giving us information again about the science and what's actually happening to the astronauts. So it's all very well done. There's a lot of science delivered in very sort of clever and entertaining ways.
Absolutely. And in fact, this series won the first Arthur C. Clarke Award for Best Science on Film and Television. That was a 2005 award.
So yes, a prestigious award for this show. You know, clearly people did think that this was a very clever way of delivering science on television. And it gets a reward with who else but Arthur C. Clarke's name.
Yeah, that's a great bit of recognition for this show.
Well, it's not just a mission to the planets. We're exploring the human body, too. No one knows how it'll respond to 6 years in space. Physically, psychologically. It's new territory.
6 years is a long time if you consider time more important than what you do with it.
I've spent more time with these guys in the last few years than anyone I know. We're already more a family than a crew.
I don't see it as giving up anything. I just won the lottery. It's you lot I feel sorry for.
So we're going to talk a little bit about spin-offs from this show, because we like to cover spin-offs if they crop up. And there's a couple here. Obviously, for a program that based itself on a lot of what had happened in the history of space exploration and the history of unmanned probes, there was an accompanying documentary called Space Odyssey, The Robot Pioneers. That was directed by Christopher Riley, the producer of the main show, and that went out on BBC4 at the time, and so again in 2004 when this was first being broadcast on BBC1, and you can catch that documentary on the DVD release we've been watching.
Yes, I think that had David Suchet narrating as well. So it was an actual documentary as opposed to a speculative documentary, but it sort of fit with the main show.
Yeah, same look and feel, and some very interesting stuff, and it's there on the DVD set for you.
There was also a book with the same title as this show, and it was by Tim Haynes and Christopher Riley, Christopher Riley being the producer of the show, and it presents the diaries of the Pegasus astronauts and has lots of full-color images from the show and graphics and information about the planets. So there's some interesting stuff there as well.
Okay. And then the BBC website for the show itself and the press pack that was launched with it, they're all still available on the BBC. And I will link to those in the show notes and on the Facebook page for this episode. Lots of interesting stuff there. Various sorts of fact files, activities, games for sort of younger viewers. And it's all still up there. And of course, it also mentions various museums that were holding special events to sort of tie in with the broadcast of this show. And there was apparently a mini sort of Space Odyssey Voyage to the Planets tour with an exhibition going to various museums around the country here in the UK, all tied into this broadcast in 2004.
I think that gives you the idea that this was a big deal when this was produced.
It was, yes. It was a big production for the BBC. They put a lot into it, and they produced a lot of supporting material for it as well, most of which is still available for us to look at.
I think it's time to get into some of our own feelings here, the good and the bad of this show. So, Eamon, what did you like about Space Odyssey Voyage to the Planets?
Well, the first thing I think has to be the way it looks. It looks fantastic. The special effects that they used, I mean, the series that sort of led to it, The Walking with Dinosaurs and all the other similar series, I think they were, you know, well known for groundbreaking visual effects. And that carries on here in Voyage to the Planets. It looks fantastic. And you can see the 4.5 million budget up there on the screen, I think, Brian.
It does look very good. That's true. I also really like the way the science is used in this and how it's portrayed. If you have watched a lot of space science and space exploration documentaries, there will be a lot of familiar things and familiar ideas coming up. You will recognize the approach that they take in a lot of things. And many of the issues and the things that are mentioned are things that have been talked about by scientists. So it's presentation and its use of science is very good indeed.
Yes, absolutely agree. The way they get the science across to us and the way they sort of demonstrate that this would be a huge scientific experiment, just the whole project, it's very well done, very well delivered, very informative and great fun.
Even on the sort of engineering side of how would this mission be put together, how would the ship be built, how would they plan it and plot the course and all of these things. And they obviously went to great lengths to do that and to make it realistic. And again, if you followed some real space exploration type things, you will see that there are some very familiar types of things, and it is really quite convincing, and that was very enjoyable for me.
Okay. The performances here, Brian, what would you say about those?
I liked them. They took the approach of really putting the actors through some of the process of what you actually go through to become an astronaut. Then they went through a great deal of research and really worked on the idea of what is the perspective and how do these people act and so on. So it, in many cases, doesn't give you sort of conventional drama performances, but you get something that's pretty convincing in terms of portraying these people as astronauts. And I thought that worked very well. And also the mission control people, the way things were portrayed, I thought was very good and very realistic.
Yes, it is. I mean, I think they are all lovely performances. It's great to have this multinational crew on board the Pegasus, all of whom are very good. I thought it was very helpful to the documentary that they chose, I think, lesser known actors so that they all, you know, we didn't know them from other stuff. And that helped with the illusion that this was an actual space mission that was being documented. For that reason, I did have a slight problem with the flight controller, not because of his performance, which is fine, but just because I recognized him from several other programs and films, and that slightly took me out of the illusion and slightly spoiled it for me in that way. But no, the performances are very good, and of course we've got, you know, we've mentioned it a few times, but we do have this wonderful narration by David Suchet, which is it's lovely, really, isn't it?
Yes. I also like the level of detail they put in. You have things, just as an example, they at one point tell the crew to be prepared. There is a solar flare that is coming at a particular time, and the crew have to, you know, roughly speaking, batten down the hatches and make sure they're safe for that. They don't say in the message that there is a solar storm coming at this time or in 20 minutes from now. What they say is, I think the solar flare is coming some number of minutes behind this message. You know, it's coming 15 minutes behind this message, because the radio message takes a number of minutes or even hours to reach the Pegasus where they are. So without going into a long explanation, they just include that little detail. Those little details were done really well, I thought.
Yes, it is good. And as you say, all the way along, they're dealing with the effects of the delay in radio communications between the Earth and the Pegasus. But it is delivered to us in that fashion. It's just as a fact rather than being explained to us laboriously. So yeah, it's very good. I should also mention the medicine on show here in Voyage to the Planets. Listeners will know that I'm a doctor and I've had criticisms of the medicine in certain shows we've discussed before. But I have to say, the medicine here, like everything else, as we would expect perhaps, is spot on. It's very realistic indeed. And the issues that the astronauts are dealing with and the issues that the flight surgeon is dealing with for them, it's all great stuff. There's a procedure at one point where one of the crew suffers a punctured lung and they have to put in a chest drain. And having put in chest drains myself, I can say that they got this spot on correct on board the Pegasus.
They definitely put a lot of attention into detail for those sorts of things. They, as I mentioned earlier, the flight surgeon back in Mission Control is dealt with in a very realistic type of way, with her concerns and the mission specialist and the the way they deal with the different points of view and so on.
Yes, it was, as you say, attention to detail throughout this show, and it's very well done. So, having said that, were there any episodes or any parts of this show that didn't work quite so well, Brian?
For me, there was really very little that seemed problematic. There is this sort of idea that it's sort of trying to be documentary and drama at the same time. It's a little bit in that midpoint where you have a certain amount in here that is not straight documentary, that is dealing with the characters' emotional states and discussions and things and so on. So if you're not quite comfortable with that little bit of drama and little bit of documentary getting mixed in there, I could see, you know, a bit of discomfort there. That didn't bother me at all.
Okay, there is that thing about it, which is, as you say, none of the landings go according to plan. Something has to go wrong, or it seems that something has to go wrong on each one. And I think it was Chris on our Facebook group who pointed out that they did introduce a certain amount of drama as a result. They were looking to introduce dramatic tension in each of the landings. So when they talk about one last sort of landing on the way back, you sort of know something is going to go wrong because of all the previous disasters so far. But there you are. There is that part of it. You know, it's part of the package to try and get us to watch and be involved.
Yeah, that's right. So that is a little bit odd, I guess, but it didn't really bother me. I still enjoyed this show greatly. I really did.
I mean, you've waited 5 years to land there, and they give you 4 hours. I mean, you might as well not go at all.
So he's still depressed?
When you've waited 5 years for your one opportunity, just show what you can do.
No one's blaming her, but she's taking it so personally.
If it bores you guys, you can imagine how it makes me feel.
John's definitely sick. Everyone's pretending it's not.
Okay, I guess that probably brings us into our recommendations, and I suppose our listeners probably know where we're going to go, Brian.
I think so. I will start by saying it's a strong recommendation from me. If you have any interest in potential near-future space travel, if you find space documentaries interesting, if you like even space science fiction, it's just a really interesting show in good documentary format. Very entertaining. I've enjoyed watching it a couple times, and I think I'll be watching it again at some time. It's good stuff, well worth watching, so absolutely, strongly recommended.
Okay. Well, I somehow missed this show when it originally came out in 2004, but I've now watched it twice for British Invaders, and it's terrific. I really enjoyed it. It's one of the easiest shows to get hold of that we've talked about recently. It's very cheap. It's not a long watch, but it is fantastic. And I found it very moving as well. It's quite a moving show. So I think it's a strong recommendation from both of us here on British Invaders, and we'd like you to check it out.
Yes, indeed.
And as ever, if you have seen it or saw it on its original broadcast and you'd like to agree or disagree with our takes on the on this show, please do get in touch with us either on email, website or Facebook page.
So, in summary, Space Odyssey, Voyage to the Planets gave us a documentary look at this speculative journey, a manned mission to a number of the planets and moons and other bodies in the solar system. And it gave us this long 6-year voyage in a couple of hours of really interesting science and information in documentary form, along with some very interesting speculative ideas and some great little character interaction and the ways that people deal with this type of long journey as well.
Splendid stuff. And as ever, as we say, please let us know if you agree or disagree or bits that we've missed out. Do tell us about them.
Oh yes, please do.
And of course, come back to us next time when we're jumping genre. We're going to horror, in particular to one of the big names of British horror, Hammer, and their foray into television, 1980s Hammer House of Horror series, which is what we'll be talking about next time on British Invaders.
That will definitely be a switch, and it'll be fun to talk about. So you can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to thegeekculturenetwork.com, you can find us there and some other great podcasts as well. We have a Facebook group. If you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there as well. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much, and until next time, this is Eamon in England, blasting off.